themselves. They said to the olive tree, "Be our king." But the olive tree answered, "Should I give up my oil, by which both gods and human beings are honored, to hold sway over the trees?" Next, the tree said to the fig tree, "Come and be our king." But the fig tree replied, "Should I give up my fruit, so good and sweet, to hold sway over the trees?" Then the tree said to the vine, "Come and be our king." But the vine answered, "Should I give up my wine, which cheers both gods and human beings, to hold sway over the trees?" Finally, all the trees said to the thorn bush, "Come and be our king." The thorn bush said to the trees, "If you really want to anoint me king over you, come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, then let fire come out of the thorn bush and consume the cedars of Lebanon. Have you acted honorably and in good faith by making Abimelech king? Have you been fair to Jerubbaal and his family? Have you treated him as he deserves? Remember that my father fought for you and risked his life to rescue you from the hand of Midian. But today you have revolted against my father's family. You have murdered his 70 sons on a single stone and have made Abimelech, the son of his female slave, king over the citizens of Shechem because he is related to you. So have you acted honorably and in good faith toward Jerubbaal and his family today? If you have, may Abimelech be your joy and may you be his too. But if you have not, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Millo, and let fire come out from you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Millo, and consume Abimelech."
Then Jotham fled, escaping to Beor, and he lived there because he was afraid of his brother Abimelech. After Abimelech had governed Israel 3 years, God stirred up animosity between Abimelech and the citizens of Shechem, so that they acted treacherously against Abimelech. God did this in order that the crime against Jerubbaal's 70 sons, the shedding of their blood, might be avenged on their brother Abimelech, and on the citizens of Shechem, who had helped him murder his brothers. In opposition to him, these citizens of Shechem set an ambush on the hilltops to rob everyone who passed by, and this was reported to Abimelech. Now Gaal, son of Ebed, moved with his brothers into Shechem, and its citizens put their confidence in him. After they had gone out into the fields and gathered the grapes and trodden them, they held a festival in the temple of their god. While they were eating and drinking, they cursed Abimelech. Then Gaal, son of Ebed, said,
"Who is Abimelech, and who is Shechem that we should be subject to him? Isn't he Jerubbaal's son, and isn't Zebul his deputy? Serve the people of Hamar, Shechem's father. Why should we serve Abimelech? If only this people were under my command, then I would get rid of him. I would say to Abimelech, call out your whole army."
When Zebul, the governor of the city, heard what Gaal, son of Ebed, said, he was very angry. Under cover, he sent messengers to Abimelech, saying,
"Gaal, son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem and are stirring up the city against you. Now then, during the night, you and your men should come and lie in wait in the fields. In the morning, at sunrise, advance against the city. When Gaal and his men come out against you, do whatever your hand finds to do."
So Abimelech and all his troops set out by night and took up concealed positions near Shechem in four companies. Now Gaal, son of Ebed, had gone out and was standing at the entrance of the city gate just as Abimelech and his troops came out from their hiding place. When Gaal saw them, he said to Zebul,
"Look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains."
Zebul replied,
"You mistake the shadows of the mountains for men."
But Gaal spoke up again.
"Look, people are coming down from the central hill, and a company is coming from the direction of the diviner's tree."
Then Zebul said to him,
"Where is your big talk now? You who said, who is Abimelech that we should be subject to him? Aren't these the men you ridiculed? Go out and fight them."
So Gaal led out the citizens of Shechem and fought Abimelech. Abimelech chased him all the way to the entrance of the gate, and many fell slain as they fled. Abimelech stayed in Arumah, and Zebul drove Gaal and his relatives out of Shechem. The next day, the people of Shechem went out to the fields, and this was reported to Abimelech. So he took his troops, divided them into three companies, and set an ambush in the fields. When he saw the people coming out of the city, he rose to attack them. Abimelech and the companies with him rushed forward to a position at the entrance of the city gate. Then two companies attacked those in the fields and struck them down. All that day Abimelech pressed his attack against the city until he had captured it and killed its people. Then he destroyed the city and scattered salt over it. On hearing this, the citizens in the Tower of Shechem went into the stronghold of the Temple of Elberith. When Abimelech heard that they had assembled there, he and all his men went up to Mount Zalmon. He took an axe and cut off some branches which he lifted to his shoulders. He ordered the men with him,
"Quick, do what you have seen me do."
So all the men cut branches and followed Abimelech. They piled them against the stronghold and set it on fire with the people still inside. So all the people in the Tower of Shechem, about 1,000 men and women, also died. Next, Abimelech went to Thebes and besieged it and captured it. Inside the city, however, was a strong tower to which all the men and women, all the people of the city, had fled. They had locked themselves in and climbed up on the tower roof. Abimelech went to the tower and attacked it. But as he approached the entrance to the tower to set it on fire, a woman dropped an upper millstone on his head and cracked his skull. Hurriedly, he called to his armor bearer,
"Draw your sword and kill me, so that they can't say a woman killed him."
So his servant ran him through, and he died. When the Israelites saw that Abimelech was dead, they went home. Thus God repaid the wickedness that Abimelech had done to his father by murdering his 70 brothers. God also made the people of Shechem pay for all their wickedness. The curse of Jotham, son of Jerubbaal, came on them. After the time of Abimelech, a man of Issachar named Tola, son of Pua, the son of Dodo, rose to save Israel. He lived in Shamer, in the hill country of Ephraim. He led Israel 23 years, then he died and was buried in Shamer. He was followed by Jair of Gilead, who led Israel 22 years. He had 30 sons who rode 30 donkeys. They controlled 30 towns in Gilead, which to this day are called Havoth Jair. When Jair died, he was buried in Canaan. Again the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. They served the Baals and the Ashtoreths, and the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the Ammonites, and the gods of the Philistines. And because the Israelites forsook the Lord and no longer served him, he became angry with them. He sold them into the hands of the Philistines and the Ammonites, who that year shattered and crushed them. For 18 years they oppressed all the Israelites on the east side of the Jordan in Gilead, the land of the Amorites. The Ammonites also crossed the Jordan to fight against Judah, Benjamin, and the house of Ephraim, and Israel was in great distress. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord,
"We have sinned against you, forsaking our God and serving the Baals."
The Lord replied,
"When the Egyptians, the Amorites, the Ammonites, the Philistines, the Sidonians, the Amalekites, and the Maonites oppressed you, and you cried to me for help, did I not save you from their hands? But you have forsaken me and served other gods, so I will no longer save you. Go and cry out to the gods you have chosen. Let them save you when you are in trouble."
But the Israelites said to the Lord,
"We have sinned. Do with us whatever you think best. But please, rescue us now."
Then they got rid of the foreign gods among them and served the Lord. and he could bear Israel's misery no longer. When the Ammonites were called to arms and camped in Gilead, the Israelites assembled and camped at Mizpah. The leaders of the people of Gilead said to each other,
"Whoever will take the lead in attacking the Ammonites will be head over all who live in Gilead."
Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a mighty warrior. His father was Gilead. His mother was a prostitute. Gilead's wife also bore him sons, and when they were grown up, they drove Jephthah away.
"You are not going to get any inheritance in our family,"
they said,
"because you are the son of another woman."
So Jephthah fled from his brothers and settled in the land of Tob, where a gang of scoundrels gathered around him and followed him. Some time later, when the Ammonites were fighting against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to get Jephthah from the land of Tob.
"Come,"
they said,
"be our commander so we can fight the Ammonites."
Jephthah said to them,
"Didn't you hate me and drive me from my father's house? Why do you come to me now when you're in trouble?"
The elders of Gilead said to him,
"Nevertheless, we are turning to you now. Come with us to fight the Ammonites, and you will be head over all of us who live in Gilead."
Jephthah answered,
"Suppose you take me back to fight the Ammonites, and the Lord gives them to me. Will I really be your head?"
The elders of Gilead replied,
"The Lord is our witness. We will certainly do as you say."
So Jephthah went with the elders of Gilead, and the people made him head and commander over them. And he repeated all his words before the Lord in Mizpah. Then Jephthah sent messengers to the Ammonite king with the question,
"What do you have against me that you have attacked my country?"
The king of the Ammonites answered Jephthah's messengers,
"When Israel came up out of Egypt, they took away my land from the Arnon to the Jabbok, all the way to the Jordan. Now give it back peaceably."
Jephthah sent back messengers to the Ammonite king, saying,
"This is what Jephthah says. Israel did not take the land of Moab or the land of the Ammonites. But when they came up out of Egypt, Israel went through the wilderness to the Red Sea and on to Kadesh. Then Israel sent messengers to the king of Edom, saying, 'Give us permission to go through your country.' But the king of Edom would not listen. They sent also to the king of Moab, and he refused. So Israel stayed at Kadesh. Next they traveled through the wilderness, skirted the lands of Edom and Moab, passed along the eastern side of the country of Moab, and camped on the other side of the Arnon. They did not enter the territory of Moab, for the Arnon was its border. Then Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who ruled in Heshbon, and said to him, 'Let us pass through your country to our own place.' Sihon, however, did not trust Israel to pass through his territory. He mustered all his army and encamped at Jahaz and fought with Israel. Then the Lord, the God of Israel, gave Sihon and his whole army into Israel's hands, and they defeated them. Israel took over all the land of the Amorites who lived in that country, capturing all of it from the Arnon to the Jabbok and from the desert to the Jordan. Now since the Lord, the God of Israel, has driven the Amorites out before his people Israel, what right have you to take it over? Will you not take what your god Chemosh gives you? Likewise, whatever the Lord our God has given us, we will possess. Are you any better than Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab? Did he ever quarrel with Israel or fight with them? For 300 years, Israel occupied Heshbon, Aroer, the surrounding settlements, and all the towns along the Arnon. Why didn't you retake them during that time? I have not wronged you, but you are doing me wrong by waging war against me. Let the Lord, the judge, decide the dispute this day between the Israelites and the Ammonites."
The king of Ammon, however, paid no attention to the message Jephthah sent him. Then the spirit of the Lord came on Jephthah. He crossed Gilead and Manasseh, passed through Mizpah of Gilead, and from there he advanced against the Ammonites, and Jephthah made a vow to the Lord.
"If you give the Ammonites into my hands, whatever comes out of the door of my house to meet me when I return in triumph from the Ammonites will be the Lord's, and I will sacrifice it as a burnt offering."
Then Jephthah went over to fight the Ammonites, and the Lord gave them into his hands. He devastated 20 towns from Aroer to the vicinity of Minnith. as far as Abel Karamim. Thus Israel subdued Ammon. When Jephthah returned to his home in Mizpah, who should come out to meet him but his daughter, dancing to the sound of timbrels? She was an only child. Except for her, he had neither son nor daughter. When he saw her, he tore his clothes and cried,
"No, my daughter, you have brought me down, and I am devastated. I have made a vow to the Lord that I cannot break."
"My father,"
she replied,
"you have given your word to the Lord. Do to me just as you promised, now that the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the Ammonites. But grant me this one request,"
she said.
"Give me 2 months to roam the hills and weep with my friends, because I will never marry."
"You may go,"
he said. And he let her go for 2 months. She and her friends went into the hills and wept because she would never marry. After the 2 months, she returned to her father, and he did to her as he had vowed. And she was a virgin. From this comes the Israelite tradition that each year the young women of Israel go out for 4 days to commemorate the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite. The Ephraimite forces were called out, and they crossed over to Zaphon and said to Jephthah,
"Why did you go to fight the Ammonites without calling us to go with you? We're going to burn down your house over your head."
Jephthah answered,
"I and my people were engaged in a great struggle with the Ammonites. And although I called, you didn't save me out of their hands. When I saw that you wouldn't help, I took my life in my hands and crossed over to fight the Ammonites. And the Lord gave me the victory over them. Now why have you come up today to fight me?"
Jephthah then called together the men of Gilead and fought against Ephraim. The Gileadites struck them down because the Ephraimites had said,
"You Gileadites are renegades from Ephraim and Manasseh."
The Gileadites captured the fords of the Jordan leading to Ephraim. And whenever a survivor of Ephraim said,
"Let me cross over,"
the Gileadites asked him,
"Are you an Ephraimite?"
If he replied,
"No,"
they said,
"All right, say Shibboleth."
If he said,
Shibboleth,
because he could not pronounce the word correctly, they seized him and killed him at the fords of the Jordan. 42,000 Ephraimites were killed at that time. Jephthah led Israel 6 years. Then Jephthah, the Gileadite, died and was buried in a town in Gilead. After him, Ibzan of Bethlehem led Israel. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters. He gave his daughters away in marriage to those outside his clan. And for his sons, he brought in 30 young women as wives from outside his clan. Ibzan led Israel 7 years, then Ibzan died and was buried in Bethlehem. After him, Elon the Zebulunite led Israel 10 years. Then Elon died and was buried in Ajalon in the land of Zebulun. After him, Abdon, son of Hillel from Pirathon, led Israel. He had 40 sons and 30 grandsons who rode on 70 donkeys. He led Israel 8 years. Then Abdon, son of Hillel, died and was buried at Pirathon in Ephraim in the hill country of the Amalekites. Again the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said,
"You are barren and childless, but you're going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now, see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines."
Then the woman went to her husband and told him,
"A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God, very awesome. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. But he said to me, you will become pregnant and have a son. Now then, drink no wine or other fermented drink, and do not eat anything unclean, because the boy will be a Nazarite of God from the womb until the day of his death.
Then Manoah prayed to the Lord.
Pardon your servant, Lord. I beg you to let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born.
God heard Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman while she was out in the field. But her husband, Manoah, was not with her. The woman hurried to tell her husband.
He's here, the man who appeared to me the other day.
Manoah got up and followed his wife. When he came to the man, he said,
Are you the man who talked to my wife?
I am,
he said. So Manoah asked him,
When your words are fulfilled, what is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and work?
The angel of the Lord answered,
Your wife must do all that I've told her. She must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, nor drink any wine or other fermented drink, nor eat anything unclean. She must do everything I have commanded her.
Manoah said to the angel of the Lord,
We would like you to stay until we prepare a young goat for you.
The angel of the Lord replied,
Even though you detain me, I will not eat any of your food. But if you prepare a burnt offering, offer it to the Lord.
Manoah did not realize that it was the angel of the Lord. Then Manoah inquired of the angel of the Lord,
What is your name, so that we may honor you when your word comes true?
He replied,
Why do you ask my name? It is beyond understanding.
Then Manoah took a young goat, together with the grain offering, and sacrificed it on a rock to the Lord. And the Lord did an amazing thing while Manoah and his wife watched. As the flame blazed up from the altar toward heaven, the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame. Seeing this, Manoah and his wife fell with their faces to the ground. When the angel of the Lord did not show himself again to Manoah and his wife, Manoah realized that it was the angel of the Lord.
We are doomed to die,
he said to his wife.
We have seen God.
But his wife answered,
If the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and grain offering from our hands, nor shown us all these things, or now told us this.
The woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he was in Mahanah Dan, between Zorah and Eshtaol. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother,
I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife.
His father and mother replied,
Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people?
Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?
But Samson said to his father,
Get her for me. She's the right one for me.
His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came on him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. Some time later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman, and there Samson held a feast, as was customary for young men. When the people saw him, they chose 30 men to be his companions.
Let me tell you a riddle,
Samson said to them.
If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. Tell us your riddle.
They said,
"Let's hear it."
He replied,
"Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet."
For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife,
"Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to steal our property?"
Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing,
"You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer."
"I haven't even explained it to my father or mother,"
he replied.
"So why should I explain it to you?"
She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him,
"What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?"
Samson said to them,
"If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle."
Then the Spirit of the Lord came on him in power. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of everything, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he returned to his father's home, and Samson's wife was given to one of his companions who had attended him at the feast. Later on, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said,
"I'm going to my wife's room."
But her father would not let him go in.
I was so sure you hated her,"
he said,
"that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead."
Samson said to them,
"This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them."
So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and standing grain, together with the vineyards and olive groves. When the Philistines asked,
"Who did this?"
they were told,
"Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion."
So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them,
"Since you have acted like this, I swear that I won't stop until I get my revenge on you."
He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam. The Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lehi. The people of Judah asked,
"Why have you come to fight us?"
"We have come to take Samson prisoner,"
they answered,
"to do to him as he did to us."
Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Etam and said to Samson,
"Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us?"
He answered,
"I merely did to them what they did to me."
They said to him,
"We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines."
Samson said,
"Swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves."
"Agreed,"
they answered.
"We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you."
So they bound him with 2 new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came on him in power. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said,
"With a donkey's jawbone I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone I have killed 1,000 men."
When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramoth-Lehi. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord,
"You have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?"
Then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned and he revived. So the spring was called En-Hakkore, and it is still there in Lehi. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. he went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told,
Samson is here.
So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying,
at dawn, we'll kill him.
But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said,
see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver.
So Delilah said to Samson,
tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued.
Samson answered her,
if anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not been dried, I become as weak as any other man.
Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. With men hidden in the room, she called to him,
Samson, the Philistines are upon you!
But he snapped the thongs as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson,
you have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied.
He said,
if anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man.
So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then, with men hidden in the room, she called to him,
Samson! The Philistines are upon you!
But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson,
until now you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied.
He replied,
if you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man.
So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with a pin. Again she called to him,
Samson, the Philistines are upon you.
He awoke from his sleep and pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric.
Samson.
Then she said to him,
how can you say, I love you, when you won't confide in me? This is the 3rd time you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength.
With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death.
You don't know.
So he told her everything.
No razor has ever been used on my head,
he said.
Because I've been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb, if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man.
When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines.
Come back once more. He has told me everything.
So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his head, and so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called,
Samson! The Philistines are upon you!
He awoke from his sleep and thought,
I'll go out as before and shake myself free.
But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying,
our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands.
When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying,
our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain.
While they were in high spirits, they shouted,
bring out Samson to entertain us!
So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand,
"Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them."
Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord.
"Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more. And let me, with one blow, get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes."
Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood. Bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other, Samson said,
"Let me die with the Philistines!"
Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. Then his brothers and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel 20 years. Now a man named Micah from the hill country of Ephraim said to his mother,
"The 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, and about which I heard you utter a curse, I have that silver with me. I took it."
Then his mother said,
"The Lord bless you, my son."
When he returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother, she said,
"I solemnly consecrate my silver to the Lord for my son, to make an image overlaid with silver. I will give it back to you."
So after he returned the silver to his mother, she took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to a silversmith, who used them to make the idol. And it was put in Micah's house. Now this man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and some household gods, and installed one of his sons as his priest. In those days Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. A young Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, who had been living within the clan of Judah, left that town in search of some other place to stay. On his way, he came to Micah's house in the hill country of Ephraim. Micah asked him,
"Where are you from?"
"I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah,"
he said,
"and I'm looking for a place to stay."
Then Micah said to him,
"Live with me and be my father and priest, and I'll give you 10 shekels of silver a year, your clothes and your food."
So the Levite agreed to live with him, and the young man became like one of his sons to him. Then Micah installed the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in his house. And Micah said,
"Now I know that the Lord will be good to me, since this Levite has become my priest."
In those days, Israel had no king. And in those days, the tribe of the Danites were seeking a place of their own where they might settle, because they had not yet come into an inheritance among the tribes of Israel. So the Danites sent 5 of their leading men from Zorah and Eshtaol to spy out the land and explore it. These men represented all the Danites. They told them,
"Go explore the land."
So they entered the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah, where they spent the night. When they were near Micah's house, they recognized the voice of the young Levite. So they turned in there and asked him,
"Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? Why are you here?"
He told them what Micah had done for him and said,
"He has hired me and I am his priest."
Then they said to him,
"Please inquire of God to learn whether our journey will be successful."
The priest answered them,
"Go in peace. Your journey has the Lord's approval."
So the 5 men left and came to Laish, where they saw that the people were living in safety, like the Sidonians, unsuspecting and secure. And since their land lacked nothing, they were prosperous. Also, they lived a long way from the Sidonians and had no relationship with anyone else. When they returned to Zorah and Eshtaol, the Danites asked them,
"How did you find things?"
They answered,
"Come on, let's attack them. We have seen the land, and it is very good. Aren't you going to do something? Don't hesitate to go there and take it over. When you get there, you will find an unsuspecting people and a spacious land that God has put into your hands. A land that lacks nothing whatever.
Then 600 men of the Danites, armed for battle, set out from Zorah and Eshtaol. On their way, they set up camp near Kiriath Jearim in Judah. This is why the place west of Kiriath Jearim is called Mahanah Dan to this day. From there, they went on to the hill country of Ephraim and came to Micah's house. Then the five men who had spied out the land of Laish said to their fellow Danites,
"Do you know that one of these houses has an ephod, some household gods, and an image overlaid with silver? Now you know what to do."
So they turned in there and went to the house of the young Levite at Micah's place and greeted him. The 600 Danites armed for battle stood at the entrance of the gate. The five men who had spied out the land went inside and took the idol, the ephod, and the household gods, while the priest and the 600 armed men stood at the entrance of the gate. When the five went into Micah's house and took the idol, the ephod, and the household gods, the priest said to them,
"What are you doing?"
They answered him,
"Be quiet. Don't say a word. Come with us and be our father and priest. Isn't it better that you serve a tribe and clan in Israel as priests rather than just one man's household?"
The priest was very pleased. He took the ephod, the household gods, and the idol, and went along with the people. Putting their little children, their livestock, and their possessions in front of them, they turned away and left. When they had gone some distance from Micah's house, the men who lived near Micah were called together and overtook the Danites. As they shouted after them, the Danites turned and said to Micah,
"What's the matter with you that you called out your men to fight?"
He replied,
"You took the gods I made and my priest and went away. What else do I have? How can you ask, 'What's the matter with you?'"
The Danites answered,
"Don't argue with us, or some of the men may get angry and attack you, and you and your family will lose your lives."
So the Danites went their way, and Micah, seeing that they were too strong for him, turned around and went back home. Then they took what Micah had made and his priest and went on to Laish against a peaceful and unsuspecting people. They attacked them with the sword and burned down their city. There was no one to rescue them because they lived a long way from Sidon and had no relationship with anyone else. The city was in a valley near Beth Rehob. The Danites rebuilt the city and settled there. They named it Dan, after their ancestor Dan, who was born to Israel, though the city used to be called Laish. There the Danites set up for themselves the idol, and Jonathan, son of Gershon, the son of Moses, and his sons were priests for the tribe of Dan until the time of the captivity of the land. They continued to use the idol Micah had made all the time the house of God was in Shiloh. In those days, Israel had no king. Now a Levite who lived in a remote area in the hill country of Ephraim took a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. But she was unfaithful to him. She left him and went back to her parents' home in Bethlehem, Judah. After she had been there 4 months, her husband went to her to persuade her to return. He had with him his servant and 2 donkeys. She took him into her parents' home, and when her father saw him, he gladly welcomed him. His father-in-law, the woman's father, prevailed on him to stay. So he remained with him 3 days, eating and drinking and sleeping there. On the 4th day, they got up early, and he prepared to leave. But the woman's father said to his son-in-law,
"Refresh yourself with something to eat, then you can go."
So the 2 of them sat down to eat and drink together. Afterward, the woman's father said,
"Please, stay tonight and enjoy yourself."
And when the man got up to go, his father-in-law persuaded him, so he stayed there that night. On the morning of the 5th day, when he rose to go, the woman's father said,
Refresh yourself. Wait till afternoon.
So the two of them ate together. Then when the man with his concubine and his servant got up to leave, his father-in-law, the woman's father, said,
Now look, it's almost evening. Spend the night here. The day is nearly over. Stay and enjoy yourself. Early tomorrow morning, you can get up and be on your way home.
But unwilling to stay another night, the man left and went toward Jebus, that is, Jerusalem, with his two saddled donkeys and his concubine. When they were near Jebus and the day was almost gone, the servant said to his master,
Come, let's stop at the city of the Jebusites and spend the night.
His master replied,
No, we won't go into any city whose people are not Israelites. We will go on to Gibeah.
He added,
Come, let's try to reach Gibeah or Ramah and spend the night in one of those places.
So they went on, and the sun set as they neared Gibeah in Benjamin. There they stopped to spend the night. They went and sat in the city square, but no one took them in for the night. That evening, an old man from the hill country of Ephraim, who was living in Gibeah, the inhabitants of the place were Benjamites, came in from his work in the fields. When he looked and saw the traveler in the city square, the old man asked,
Where are you going? Where did you come from?
He answered,
We are on our way from Bethlehem in Judah to a remote area in the hill country of Ephraim, where I live. I have been to Bethlehem in Judah, and now I am going to the house of the Lord. No one has taken me in for the night. We have both straw and fodder for our donkeys, and bread and wine for ourselves, your servants. Me, the woman, and the young man with us. We don't need anything.
You are welcome at my house,
the old man said.
Let me supply whatever you need. Only don't spend the night in the square.
So he took him into his house and fed his donkeys. After they had washed their feet, they had something to eat and drink. While they were enjoying themselves, some of the wicked men of the city surrounded the house. Pounding on the door, they shouted to the old man who owned the house.
Bring out the man who came to your house so we can have sex with him.
The owner of the house went outside and said to them,
No, my friends, don't be so vile. Since this man is my guest, don't do this outrageous thing. Look, here is my virgin daughter and his concubine. I will bring them out to you now, and you can use them and do to them whatever you wish. But as for this man, don't do such an outrageous thing.
But the men would not listen to him. So the man took his concubine and sent her outside to them. And they raped her and abused her throughout the night, and at dawn they let her go. At daybreak, the woman went back to the house where her master was staying, fell down at the door, and lay there until daylight. When her master got up in the morning and opened the door of the house and stepped out to continue on his way, there lay his concubine, fallen in the doorway of the house, with her hands on the threshold. He said to her,
Get up, let's go.
But there was no answer. Then he put her on his donkey and set out for home. When he reached home, he took a knife and cut up his concubine limb by limb into 12 parts and sent them into all the areas of Israel. Everyone who saw it said,
Such a thing has never been seen or done, not since the day the Israelites came up out of Egypt.
Think about it. Consider it. Tell us what to do.
Then all the Israelites from Dan to Beersheba and from the land of Gilead came out with one accord and assembled before the Lord in Mizpah. The leaders of all the people of the tribes of Israel took their places in the assembly of the people of God. 400,000 soldiers armed with swords. The Benjamites heard that the Israelites had gone up to Mizpah. Then the Israelites said,
Tell us how this awful thing happened.
So the Levite, the husband of the murdered woman, said,
I and my concubine came to Gibeah in Benjamin to spend the night. During the night, the men of Gibeah came after me and surrounded the house, intending to kill me. They raped my concubine, and she died. I took my concubine, cut her into pieces and sent one piece to each region of Israel's inheritance, because they committed this lewd and outrageous act in Israel. Now, all you Israelites, speak up and give your verdict.
All the people rose with one accord, saying,
None of us will go home. No, not one of us will return to his house. But now this is what we'll do to Gibeah. We'll go up against it as the lot directs. We'll take 10 men out of every 100 from all the tribes of Israel, and 100 from 1,000, and 1,000 from 10,000 to get provisions for the army. Then, when the army arrives at Gibeah in Benjamin, it can give them what they deserve for this outrageous act done in Israel.
So all the Israelites got together and united against the city with one accord. The tribes of Israel sent messengers throughout the tribe of Benjamin, saying,
What about this awful crime that was committed among you? Now turn those wicked men of Gibeah over to us, so that we may put them to death and purge the evil from Israel.
But the Benjamites would not listen to their fellow Israelites. From their towns they came together at Gibeah to fight against the Israelites. At once the Benjamites mobilized 26,000 swordsmen from their towns, in addition to 700 able young men from those living in Gibeah. Among all these soldiers there were 700 who were left-handed, each of whom could sling a stone at a hare and not miss. Israel, apart from Benjamin, mustered 400,000 swordsmen, all of them fighting men. The Israelites went up to Bethel and inquired of God. They said,
Who of us is to go up first to fight against the Benjamites?
The Lord replied,
Judah shall go first.
The next morning, the Israelites got up and pitched camp near Gibeah. The Israelites went out to fight the Benjamites and took up battle positions against them at Gibeah. The Benjamites came out of Gibeah and cut down 22,000 Israelites on the battlefield that day. But the Israelites encouraged one another and again took up their positions where they had stationed themselves the first day. The Israelites went up and wept before the Lord until evening, and they inquired of the Lord. They said,
Shall we go up again to fight against the Benjamites, our fellow Israelites?
The Lord answered,
Go up against them.
Then the Israelites drew near to Benjamin the second day. This time, when the Benjamites came out from Gibeah to oppose them, they cut down another 18,000 Israelites, all of them armed with swords. Then all the Israelites, the whole army, went up to Bethel, and there they sat weeping before the Lord. They fasted that day until evening, and presented burnt offerings and fellowship offerings to the Lord. And the Israelites inquired of the Lord. In those days the Ark of the Covenant of God was there with Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, ministering before it. They asked,
Shall we go up again to fight against the Benjamites, our fellow Israelites, or not?
The Lord responded,
Go, for tomorrow I will give them into your hands.
Then Israel set an ambush around Gibeah. They went up against the Benjamites on the third day and took up positions against Gibeah as they had done before. The Benjamites came out to meet them and were drawn away from the city. They began to inflict casualties on the Israelites as before, so that about 30 of them fell in the open field and on the roads, the one leading to Bethel and the other to Gibeah. While the Benjamites were saying,
We are defeating them as before.
The Israelites were saying,
Let's retreat and draw them away from the city to the roads.
All the men of Israel moved from their places and took up positions at Baal Tamar, and the Israelite ambush charged out of its place on the west of Gibeah. Then 10,000 of Israel's able young men made a frontal attack on Gibeah. The fighting was so heavy that the Benjamites did not realize how near disaster was. The Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel, and on that day the Israelites struck down 25,100 Benjamites, all armed with swords. Then the Benjamites saw that they were beaten. Now the men of Israel had given way before Benjamin because they relied on the ambush they had set near Gibeah. Those who had been in ambush made a sudden dash into Gibeah, spread out, and put the whole city to the sword. The Israelites had arranged with the ambush that they should send up a great cloud of smoke from the city, and then the Israelites would turn in the battle. The Benjamites had begun to inflict casualties on the Israelites, about 30, and they said,
"We are defeating them as in the first battle."
But when the column of smoke began to rise from the city, the Benjamites turned and saw the smoke of the whole city going up into the sky. Then the Israelites turned on them, and the Benjamites were terrified because they realized that disaster had come on them. So they fled before the Israelites in the direction of the wilderness, but they could not escape the battle. And the Israelites who came out of the towns cut them down there. They surrounded the Benjamites, chased them, and easily overran them in the vicinity of Gibeah on the east. 18,000 Benjamites fell, all of them valiant fighters. As they turned and fled toward the wilderness to the Rock of Rimmon, the Israelites cut down 5,000 men along the roads. They kept pressing after the Benjamites as far as Gidom and struck down 2,000 more. On that day, 25,000 Benjamite swordsmen fell, all of them valiant fighters. But 600 men turned and fled into the wilderness to the Rock of Rimmon, where they stayed 4 months. The men of Israel went back to Benjamin and put all the towns to the sword, including the animals and everything else they found. All the towns they came across, they set on fire. The men of Israel had taken an oath at Mizpah.
"Not one of us will give his daughter in marriage to a Benjamite."
The people went to Bethel, where they sat before God until evening, raising their voices and weeping bitterly.
"Lord God of Israel,"
they cried,
"why has this happened to Israel? Why should one tribe be missing from Israel today?"
Early the next day, the people built an altar and presented burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then the Israelites asked,
"Who from all the tribes of Israel has failed to assemble before the Lord?"
For they had taken a solemn oath that anyone who failed to assemble before the Lord at Mizpah was to be put to death. Now the Israelites grieved for Benjamin, one of their tribes.
"Today, one tribe is cut off from Israel,"
they said.
"How can we provide wives for those who are left, since we have taken an oath by the Lord not to give them any of our daughters in marriage?"
Then they asked,
"Which one of the tribes of Israel failed to assemble before the Lord at Mizpah?"
They discovered that no one from Jabesh-Gilead had come to the camp for the assembly. For when they counted the people, they found that none of the people of Jabesh-Gilead were there. So the assembly sent 12,000 fighting men with instructions to go to Jabesh-Gilead and put to the sword those living there, including the women and children.
"This is what you are to do,"
they said.
"Kill every male and every woman who is not a virgin."
They found among the people living in Jabesh-Gilead 400 young women who had never slept with a man, and they took them to the camp at Shiloh in Canaan. Then the whole assembly sent an offer of peace to the Benjamites at the Rock of Rimmon. So the Benjamites returned at that time and were given the women of Jabesh-Gilead who had been spared. But there were not enough for all of them. The people grieved for Benjamin because the Lord had made a gap in the tribes of Israel. And the elders of the assembly said,
"With the women of Benjamin destroyed, how shall we provide wives for the men who are left? The Benjamite survivors must have heirs,"
they said,
"so that a tribe of Israel will not be wiped out."
"We can't give them our daughters as wives, since we Israelites have taken this oath. Cursed be anyone who gives a wife to a Benjamite."
"But look, there is the annual festival of the Lord in Shiloh, to the north of Bethel and east of the road that goes from Bethel to Shechem and to the south of Labona."
So they instructed the Benjamites, saying,
"Go and hide in the vineyards and watch. When the young women of Shiloh come out to join in the dancing, then rush from the vineyards, and each of you seize a wife from the young women of Shiloh and go to the land of Benjamin. When their fathers or brothers complain to us, we will say to them, 'Do us a kindness by helping them, because we did not get wives for them during the war. And you are innocent, since you did not give your daughters to them.
So that is what the Benjamites did. While the young women were dancing, each man caught one and carried her off to be his wife. Then they returned to their inheritance and rebuilt the towns and settled in them. At that time, the Israelites left that place and went home to their tribes and clans, each to his own inheritance. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law,
"Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband."
Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her,
"We will go back with you to your people."
But Naomi said,
"Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight, and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried with them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me."
At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her.
"Look,"
said Naomi,
"your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her."
But Ruth replied,
"Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me.
When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed,
"Can this be Naomi?"
"Don't call me Naomi,"
she told them.
"Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me."
So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi,
"Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor."
Naomi said to her,
"Go ahead, my daughter."
So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters.
"The Lord be with you."
"The Lord bless you,"
they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters,
"Who does that young woman belong to?"
The overseer replied,
"She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please, let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter."
So Boaz said to Ruth,
"My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the harvesters are working, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled."
At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him,
"Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?"
Boaz replied,
"I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge."
"May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have reassured me and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants."
At mealtime, Boaz said to her,
"Come over here. Have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar."
When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men,
"Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her."
So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her,
"Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you."
Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working.
"The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz,"
she said.
"The Lord bless him."
Naomi said to her daughter-in-law,
"He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead."
She added,
"That man is our close relative. He is one of our family guardians."
Then Ruth, the Moabite, said,
"He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'"
Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law,
"It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field, you might be harmed."
So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her,
"My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you're there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do."
"I will do whatever you say,"
Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet.
Who are you?"
he asked.
"I am your servant, Ruth,"
she said.
"Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a family guardian."
"The Lord bless you, my daughter,"
he replied.
"This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a family guardian, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night. And in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your family guardian, good. Let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning."
So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said,
"No one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor."
He also said,
"Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out."
When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked,
"How did it go, my daughter?"
Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added,
"He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'"
Then Naomi said,
"Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens. For the man will not rest until the matter is settled today."
Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the family guardian he had mentioned came along. Boaz said,
"Come over here, my friend, and sit down."
So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said,
"Sit here."
And they did so. Then he said to the family guardian,
"Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line."
"I will redeem it,"
he said. Then Boaz said,
"On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property."
At this, the family guardian said,
"Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it."
Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the family guardian said to Boaz,
"Buy it yourself."
And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people,
"Today, you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth, the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today, you are witnesses.
Then the elders and all the people at the gate said,
"We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah."
So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi,
"Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a family guardian. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth."
Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said,
"Naomi has a son!"
And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This, then, is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nashon, Nashon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. First Samuel. There was a certain man from Ramathaim, a Zuphite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Suph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, Her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband, Elkanah, would say to her,
Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?
Once, when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly, and she made a vow, saying,
Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head.
As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her,
How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine.
Not so, my lord,
Hannah replied.
I'm a woman who is deeply troubled. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief.
Eli answered,
Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him.
She said,
May your servant find favor in your eyes.
Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord, and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah made love to his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying,
Because I asked the Lord for him.
When Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband,
After the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always.
Do what seems best to you.
Her husband Elkanah told her,
Stay here until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord make good his word.
So the woman stayed at home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. When the bull had been sacrificed, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him,
Pardon me, my lord. As surely as you live, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord.
And he worshiped the Lord there. Then Hannah prayed and said,
My heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There's no one holy like the Lord. There's no one besides you. There's no rock like our God. Do not keep talking so proudly or let your mouth speak such arrogance, for the Lord is a God who knows, and by him deeds are weighed. The bows of the warriors are broken, but those who stumbled are armed with strength. Those who were full hired themselves out for food, but those who were hungry are hungry no more. She who was barren has borne 7 children, but she who has had many sons pines away. The Lord brings death and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and raises up. The Lord sends poverty and wealth. He humbles and he exalts. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ashes. He seats them with princes and has them inherit a throne of honor. For the foundations of the earth are the Lord's. On them he has set the world. He will guard the feet of his faithful servants, but the wicked will be silenced in the place of darkness. It is not by strength that one prevails. Those who oppose the Lord will be broken. The Most High will thunder from heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed.
Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, but the boy ministered before the Lord under Eli the priest. Eli's sons were scoundrels. They had no regard for the Lord. Now it was the practice of the priests that whenever any of the people offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged fork in his hand while the meat was being boiled and would plunge the fork into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. Whatever the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. This is how they treated all the Israelites who came to Shiloh. But even before the fat was burned, the priest's servant would come and say to the person who was sacrificing,
"Give the priest some meat to roast. He won't accept boiled meat from you, but only raw."
If the person said to him,
"Let the fat be burned first, and then take whatever you want,"
the servant would answer,
"No, hand it over now. If you don't, I'll take it by force."
This sin of the young men was very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. But Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy wearing a linen ephod. Each year his mother made him a little robe and took it to him when she went up with her husband to offer the annual sacrifice. Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife, saying,
"May the Lord give you children by this woman to take the place of the one she prayed for and gave to the Lord."
Then they would go home, and the Lord was gracious to Hannah. She gave birth to three sons and two daughters. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So he said to them,
"Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons, the report I hear spreading among the Lord's people is not good. If anyone sins against another human being, God may mediate for the offender. But if anyone sins against the Lord, who will intercede for them?"
His sons, however, did not listen to their father's rebuke, for it was the Lord's will to put them to death. And the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. Now a man of God came to Eli and said to him,
"This is what the Lord says. Did I not clearly reveal myself to the family of your ancestor when they were in Egypt under Pharaoh? I chose your ancestor out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, and to wear an ephod in my presence. I also gave your ancestors' family all the food offerings presented by the Israelites. Why do you scorn my sacrifice and offering that I prescribed for my dwelling? Why do you honor your sons more than me by fattening yourselves on the choice parts of every offering made by my people Israel? Therefore, the Lord, the God of Israel, declares, I promised that the members of your family would minister before me forever. But now the Lord declares, far be it from me. Those who honor me, I will honor. But those who despise me will be disdained. The time is coming when I will cut short your strength and the strength of the members of your family, so that no one in it will reach old age, and you will see distress in my dwelling. Although good will be done to Israel, no one in your family line will ever reach old age. Every one of you that I do not cut off from serving at my altar, I will spare only to destroy your sight and sap your strength, and all your descendants will die in the prime of life. And what happens to your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, will be a sign to you. They will both die on the same day. I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and mind. I will firmly establish his family line, and he will minister before my anointed one always. Then everyone left in your family line will come and bow down before him for a piece of silver and a loaf of bread and plead, appoint me to some priestly office so I can have food to eat.
The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the house of the Lord where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered,
"Here I am."
And he ran to Eli and said,
"Here I am. You called me?"
But Eli said,
"I did not call. Go back and lie down."
So he went and lay down. Again the Lord called,
"Samuel."
And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said,
"Here I am. You called me?"
"My son,"
Eli said,
"I did not call. Go back and lie down."
Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. A third time the Lord called,
"Samuel."
And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said,
"Here I am, you called me."
Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel,
"Go and lie down. And if he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'"
So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling as at the other times,
"Samuel, Samuel."
Then Samuel said,
"Speak, for your servant is listening."
And the Lord said to Samuel,
"See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears about it tingle. At that time, I will carry out against Eli everything I spoke against his family, from beginning to end. For I told him that I would judge his family forever because of the sin he knew about. His sons blasphemed God, and he failed to restrain them. Therefore, I swore to the house of Eli, the guilt of Eli's house will never be atoned for by sacrifice or offering."
Samuel lay down until morning and then opened the doors of the house of the Lord. He was afraid to tell Eli the vision, but Eli called him and said,
"Samuel, my son."
Samuel answered,
"Here I am."
"What was it he said to you?"
Eli asked.
"Do not hide it from me. May God deal with you, be it ever so severely, if you hide from me anything he told you."
So Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing from him. Then Eli said,
"He is the Lord. Let him do what is good in his eyes."
The Lord was with Samuel as he grew up, and he let none of Samuel's words fall to the ground. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, recognized that Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. The Lord continued to appear at Shiloh, and there he revealed himself to Samuel through his word. And Samuel's word came to all Israel. Now the Israelites went out to fight against the Philistines. The Israelites camped at Ebenezer, and the Philistines at Aphek. The Philistines deployed their forces to meet Israel. And as the battle spread, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 of them on the battlefield. When the soldiers returned to camp, the elders of Israel asked,
"Why did the Lord bring defeat on us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Lord's Covenant from Shiloh, so that he may go with us and save us from the hand of our enemies."
So the people sent men to Shiloh, and they brought back the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim. And Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. When the Ark of the Lord's Covenant came into the camp, all Israel raised such a great shout that the ground shook. Hearing the uproar, the Philistines asked,
"What's all this shouting in the Hebrew camp?"
When they learned that the Ark of the Lord had come into the camp, the Philistines were afraid.
"A god has come into the camp,"
they said.
"We're in trouble.
Nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us. Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? They are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness."
"Be strong, Philistines. Be men, or you'll be subject to the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight."
So the Philistines fought, and the Israelites were defeated, and every man fled to his tent. The slaughter was very great. Israel lost 30,000 foot soldiers. The Ark of God was captured, and Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, died. That same day, a Benjamite ran from the battle line and went to Shiloh with his clothes torn and dust on his head. When he arrived, there was Eli sitting on his chair by the side of the road watching, because his heart feared for the Ark of God. When the man entered the town and told what had happened, the whole town sent up a cry. Eli heard the outcry and asked,
"What is the meaning of this uproar?"
The man hurried over to Eli, who was 98 years old and whose eyes had failed so that he could not see. He told Eli,
"I've just come from the battle line. I fled from it this very day."
Eli asked,
"What happened, my son?"
The one who brought the news replied,
"Israel fled before the Philistines, and the army has suffered heavy losses. Also, your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the Ark of God has been captured."
When he mentioned the Ark of God, Eli fell backward off his chair by the side of the gate. His neck was broken, and he died, for he was an old man, and he was heavy. He had led Israel 40 years. His daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant and near the time of delivery. When she heard the news that the Ark of God had been captured and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she went into labor and gave birth, but was overcome by her labor pains. As she was dying, the women attending her said,
"Don't despair. You have given birth to a son."
But she did not respond or pay any attention. She named the boy Ichabod, saying,
"The glory has departed from Israel."
Because of the capture of the Ark of God and the deaths of her father-in-law and her husband, she said,
"The glory has departed from Israel, for the Ark of God has been captured."
After the Philistines had captured the Ark of God, they took it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Then they carried the Ark into Dagon's temple and set it beside Dagon. When the people of Ashdod rose early the next day, there was Dagon fallen on his face on the ground before the Ark of the Lord. They took Dagon and put him back in his place. But the following morning when they rose, there was Dagon fallen on his face on the ground before the Ark of the Lord. His head and hands had been broken off and were lying on the threshold. Only his body remained. That is why to this day neither the priests of Dagon nor any others who enter Dagon's temple at Ashdod step on the threshold. The Lord's hand was heavy on the people of Ashdod and its vicinity. He brought devastation on them and afflicted them with tumors. When the people of Ashdod saw what was happening, they said,
The Ark of the God of Israel must not stay here with us, because his hand is heavy on us and on Dagon, our God.
So they called together all the rulers of the Philistines and asked them,
"What shall we do with the Ark of the God of Israel?"
They answered,
"Have the Ark of the God of Israel moved to Gath."
So they moved the Ark of the God of Israel. But after they had moved it, the Lord's hand was against that city, throwing it into a great panic. He afflicted the people of the city, both young and old, with an outbreak of tumors. So they sent the Ark of God to Ekron. As the Ark of God was entering Ekron, the people of Ekron cried out,
"They have brought the Ark of the God of Israel around to us to kill us and our people."
So they called together all the rulers of the Philistines and said,
"Send the Ark of the God of Israel away. Let it go back to its own place, or it will kill us and our people."
For death had filled the city with panic. God's hand was very heavy on it. Those who did not die were afflicted with tumors, and the outcry of the city went up to heaven. When the Ark of the Lord had been in Philistine territory 7 months, the Philistines called for the priests and the diviners and said,
"What shall we do with the Ark of the Lord? Tell us how we should send it back to its place."
They answered,
"If you return the Ark of the God of Israel, do not send it back to him without a gift. By all means, send a guilt offering to him. Then you will be healed, and you will know why his hand has not been lifted from you."
The Philistines asked,
"What guilt offering should we send to him?"
They replied,
5 gold tumors and 5 gold rats, according to the number of the Philistine rulers, because the same plague has struck both you and your rulers. Make models of the tumors and of the rats that are destroying the country, and give glory to Israel's God. Perhaps he will lift his hand from you and your gods and your land. Why do you harden your hearts as the Egyptians and Pharaoh did? When Israel's God dealt harshly with them, did they not send the Israelites out so they could go on their way? Now then, get a new cart ready, with 2 cows that have calved that have never been yoked. Hitch the cows to the cart, but take their calves away and pin them up. Take the Ark of the Lord and put it on the cart, and in a chest beside it put the gold objects you are sending back to him as a guilt offering. Send it on its way, but keep watching it. If it goes up to its own territory, toward Beth Shemesh, then the Lord has brought this great disaster on us. But if it does not, then we will know that it was not his hand that struck us, but that it happened to us by chance.
So they did this. They took 2 such cows and hitched them to the cart and pinned up their calves. They placed the Ark of the Lord on the cart and along with it the chest containing the gold rats and the models of the tumors. Then the cows went straight up toward Beth Shemesh, keeping on the road and lowing all the way. They did not turn to the right or to the left. The rulers of the Philistines followed them as far as the border of Beth Shemesh. Now the people of Beth Shemesh were harvesting their wheat in the valley, and when they looked up and saw the ark, they rejoiced at the sight. The cart came to the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh, and there it stopped beside a large rock. The people chopped up the wood of the cart and sacrificed the cows as a burnt offering to the Lord. The Levites took down the Ark of the Lord, together with the chest containing the gold objects, and placed them on the large rock. On that day, the people of Beth Shemesh offered burnt offerings and made sacrifices to the Lord. The 5 rulers of the Philistines saw all this, and then returned that same day to Ekron. These are the gold tumors the Philistines sent as a guilt offering to the Lord. 1 each for Ashdod, Gaza, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron. And the number of the gold rats was according to the number of Philistine towns belonging to the 5 rulers, the fortified towns with their country villages. The large rock on which the Levites set the Ark of the Lord is a witness to this day in the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh. But God struck down some of the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, putting 70 of them to death because they looked into the Ark of the Lord. The people mourned because of the heavy blow the Lord had dealt them, and the people of Beth Shemesh asked,
"Who can stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God? To whom will the Ark go up from here?"
Then they sent messengers to the people of Kiriath Jearim, saying,
"The Philistines have returned the Ark of the Lord. Come down and take it up to your town."
So the men of Kiriath Jearim came and took up the Ark of the Lord. They brought it to Abinadab's house on the hill and consecrated Eleazar, his son, to guard the Ark of the Lord. The Ark remained at Kiriath Jearim a long time, 20 years in all. Then all the people of Israel turned back to the Lord. So Samuel said to the whole house of Israel,
"If you are returning to the Lord with all your hearts, then rid yourselves of the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths, and commit yourselves to the Lord and serve him only. And he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines."
So the Israelites put away their Baals and Ashtoreths and served the Lord only. Then Samuel said,
"Assemble all Israel at Mizpah, and I will intercede with the Lord for you."
When they had assembled at Mizpah, they drew water and poured it out before the Lord. On that day they fasted, and there they confessed,
"We have sinned against the Lord."
Now Samuel was serving as leader of Israel at Mizpah. When the Philistines heard that Israel had assembled at Mizpah, the rulers of the Philistines came up to attack them. When the Israelites heard of it, they were afraid because of the Philistines. They said to Samuel,
"Do not stop crying out to the Lord our God for us, that he may rescue us from the hand of the Philistines."
Then Samuel took a suckling lamb and sacrificed it as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. He cried out to the Lord on Israel's behalf, and the Lord answered him. While Samuel was sacrificing the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to engage Israel in battle. But that day, the Lord thundered with loud thunder against the Philistines and threw them into such a panic that they were routed before the Israelites. The men of Israel rushed out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines, slaughtering them along the way to a point below Beth-Kar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Shen. He named it Ebenezer, saying,
"Thus far the Lord has helped us."
So the Philistines were subdued, and they stopped invading Israel's territory. Throughout Samuel's lifetime, the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines. The towns from Ekron to Gath that the Philistines had captured from Israel were restored, and Israel delivered the neighboring territory from the hands of the Philistines. And there was peace between Israel and the Amorites. Samuel continued as Israel's leader all the days of his life. From year to year, he went on a circuit from Bethel to Gilgal to Mizpah, judging Israel in all those places. But he always went back to Ramah, where his home was, and there he also held court for Israel, and he built an altar there to the Lord. When Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as Israel's leaders. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah, and they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him,
"You are old, and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have."
But when they said,
"Give us a king to lead us,"
this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him,
"Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king, as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods. So they are doing to you. Now, listen to them, but warn them solemnly, and let them know what the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights."
Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said,
"This is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen. But the Lord will not answer you in that day.
But the people refused to listen to Samuel.
No,
they said.
We want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles.
When Samuel heard all that the people said, he repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered,
"Listen to them and give them a king."
Then Samuel said to the Israelites,
"Everyone, go back to your own town."
There was a Benjamite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, the son of Zerah, the son of Bicharath, the son of Aphiah of Benjamin. Kish had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel, and he was a head taller than anyone else. Now the donkeys belonging to Saul's father Kish were lost, and Kish said to his son Saul,
"Take one of the servants with you and go and look for the donkeys."
So he passed through the hill country of Ephraim and through the area around Shalisha, but they did not find them. They went on into the district of Shaalim, but the donkeys were not there. Then he passed through the territory of Benjamin, but they did not find them. When they reached the district of Zuph, Saul said to the servant who was with him,
"Come, let's go back, or my father will stop thinking about the donkeys and start worrying about us."
But the servant replied,
"Look, in this town there is a man of God. He is highly respected, and everything he says comes true. Let's go there now. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take."
Saul said to his servant,
"If we go, what can we give the man? The food in our sacks is gone. We have no gift to take to the man of God. What do we have?"
The servant answered him again,
"Look,"
he said,
"I have a quarter of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man of God so that he will tell us what way to take."
Formerly in Israel, if people went to inquire of God, they would say, "Come, let us go to the seer," because the prophet of today used to be called a seer.
"Good,"
Saul said to his servant,
"come, let's go."
So they set out for the town where the man of God was. As they were going up the hill to the town, they met some young women coming out to draw water, and they asked them,
"Is the seer here?"
"He is,"
they answered.
"He's ahead of you. Hurry now. He has just come to our town today, for the people have a sacrifice at the high place. As soon as you enter the town, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. The people will not begin eating until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterward, those who are invited will eat. Go up now. You should find him about this time."
They went up to the town, and as they were entering it, there was Samuel coming toward them on his way up to the high place. Now the day before Saul came, the Lord had revealed this to Samuel.
"About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over my people Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me."
When Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him,
"This is the man I spoke to you about. He will govern my people."
Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked,
"Would you please tell me where the seer's house is?"
I am the seer.
Samuel replied,
Go up ahead of me to the high place, for the day you are to eat with me. And in the morning, I will send you on your way and will tell you all that is in your heart. As for the donkeys you lost 3 days ago, do not worry about them. They have been found. And to whom is all the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and your whole family line?